on 1116 SEN. Hungry for sport with Kevin Bartlett for Penfold Mazda, celebrating 50 years of the Penfold family, and Flex Vehicle Management Service from 67 cents a day. Visit flexvs.com.
9:07, good morning and welcome to the program. AFL Football Manager Mark Evans has urged the football world to pay more respect to besieged Carlton coach Mick Malthouse. The next fortnight should be a celebration of Malthouse's coaching, he says. It would be nice if the AFL paid more respect to Mick and acknowledged he breaks McHale's record this week on Anzac Day in New Zealand. McHale was not at the 1930 Grand Final. He was home in bed, ill. He wasn't at the game. He was coach of Collingwood, but did not coach the team on that day. This is an historical lie that the AFL and its historians continue to perpetuate. For what reason, I don't know. Embarrassment, maybe. The AFL does not recognise Alistair Clarkson coached Hawthorn in five games when ill last year, does not recognise Ken Hinckley coached against North in 2013 when ill, and doesn't recognise that Peter Swab coached against Carlton in 2003 when in hospital with a heart condition. Yet they recognise McHale. The AFL historians try to tell us that the Pies didn't hold a press conference to officially say who was a replacement for the ill McHale. My research tells me that the Morse code operator was sick that day and the carrier pigeons were on strike. This amazing record deserves the recognition it deserves, says Evans. If that is the case, don't keep portraying an historical lie. I'm KB. That's my take.
He's about to break one of the most amazing records in the history of the game. I would say make sure you pay the appropriate respect for this week and next week when he eventually breaks the record.
Now, I know some other historians had different views that would come down to the 1930 Grand Final. Did all the preparation, the team selection, pretty much everything that was done to win that game was done by McHale. Ultimately, the decision was made that the premiership coach in 1930 was Jock McHale. And the game was awarded to him. So after that, I think it's just a debate between historians and others who might debate the nuance.
Premiership success. He's managed to take different playing groups to the top of the mountain, managed to invoke great player loyalty. He always backs his player. Sometimes he'll come across as grumpy, but you can never, ever doubt that he's trying to do the best thing for his club.
There's Gil McLachlan from October 2014 and Mark Evans on last night on the run home. 9:42, 9:11, 16 is always our famous talkback number. You may want to make a comment about giving Mick more respect, says Mark Evans, the boss of the AFL Football Operations Manager. 9:42, 9:11, 16, 0433 98 11 16. If you want to tweet at Kevin Bartlett 29 or Hungry for Sport. Coming up, the Buzz, Johnny Ralph is going to join us, so you can always set the agenda. It's your forum. Ian Robson will join us later in the program from Victory, and also We Fix Your Golf Swing today with Rowan Dummett, Brian Waldron, always the business of sport. But coming up, the Buzz.
Well, I'm a king bee, baby. Want you to be my queen. Together we commit, honey.
On Hungry for Sport, John Ralph.
Get on to Johnny Ralph.
I have got on to Johnny Ralph. Johnny Ralph, what is your thoughts on Mick Malthouse and McHale and the AFL giving Mick respect?
My thoughts, Kevin, are that you are a stubborn bugger, aren't you? I don't know if Jock coached that game.
No, he didn't coach. He wasn't there.
I've spoken to Michael Roberts, the Collingwood historian. He says that he gave specific instructions.
Did he now?
I've spoken to Glenn McFarlane, his official biographer, who is certain that he coached the game. I've spoken to relatives of people who handed those instructions on. But he wasn't at the game that day. What I am absolutely certain of is that the AFL has made a very poor decision to let this drift along for months and years and decades until finally we saw someone within touching distance of this decision. What they should have done is brought everyone together, Glenn McFarlane and Michael and Cole Hutchison and everyone that was relevant, and made a decision as soon as Mick Malthouse signed his contract at Carlton, when we knew he was going to get to 714 or 15 games. And instead, they made a sneaky decision on, November last year to take Bob Rush's game away from him. And I'm not sure whether they would have even revealed that unless we'd asked them about it. And so we get to this situation where it's hard to pay Mick Malthouse respect when you've got to think that he's probably breaking that record this week rather than next. Yeah. And as for him showing respect and us showing respect to him, I'm not sure about that. I don't think you get some honeymoon period where all of a sudden we just put aside all of the great stories, the negative stories, the highs and the lows of Mick Malthouse, and just eulogise him and say, what a great bloke. I love Mick. He's my favourite pal. You know what? Mick Malthouse, he's a hard, curmudgeonly, tough, stubborn bloke. He loves his players. They love him. He's got a combative relationship with the media. We talk about that. And you know what else? He is in the midst of the greatest struggle of his career, trying to get a new contract at Carlton, which I don't think he will get. So I'm not sure about putting aside all of the relevant details. I think we just celebrate Mick for what he is, a great champion of the game, who's also got a real battle on his hands to try and save his career.
But hasn't the media been showing Mick respect? The fact is, no one's knocking Mick. People are just saying, what is going on at Carlton? Why,
no doubt.
Why hasn't Carlton reappointed Mick Malthouse as coach when they've told us there's a rebuild? So I don't know whether people are not showing any respect for Mick. They're talking about a situation, circumstances that are taking place at the club that he is the coach of.
You know how much respect we're showing for Mick? A heck of a lot of respect. This side has started the season 0-3, then 0-4. And now 0-3 and could continue to lose a lot of games. They were supposedly in the premiership mode, and yet somehow they snuck in the back door of finals in 2013. They missed finals last year. So if it was anyone other than Mick, we would be saying, mate, these blokes will sack this guy in a heartbeat. He won't last out the season. Yet because it is Mick Malthouse, he's a triple premiership coach, we're showing him enough respect to say, well, he might still be some small chance to get a contract extension. That's the respect that we have for him. I think we're just keeping him accountable in terms of his performances. He's a wonderful coach. There will be so many amazing things written about him in the next couple of weeks by all and sundry, great tributes of the people he's coached, of the achievements that he has. But I don't think we should put aside the current situation, and Mick wouldn't want that. Mick knows that he's a coach in modern era, which means you get scrutinised to within an inch of your life.
And if the AFL wants to show respect to Mick, show respect by not perpetuating an historical lie, which they are doing. Now, just with you said those Collingwood historians, you mentioned them before. Michael Roberts was one. I think Glenn McFarlane was another. Now, why is it the AFL doesn't recognise Alistair Clarkson and Ken Hinckley, Peter Swap, because they say there was a press conference held? How many press conferences do you think were held at football clubs back in the late 1920s and early 1930s?
Well, I think the
many press conferences?
Oh, I think none. I think the press conference is only a part of it.
They get put on the web, did they?
Yeah, but let's look. I don't know whether he coached the game.
No, he never. Look, doesn't matter what anyone says. He can give as many instructions as he likes before the game. He wasn't at the ground. He wasn't at the game. He didn't see the game. He didn't see the game. So he didn't coach the game. He was the coach of Collingwood, but he didn't coach.
I'd feel
now,
a lot
anyone
more
with any semblance of sanity can say he was not at the game.
Well, I'd feel a lot more comfortable if he was passing along instructions, if he was listening it to his radio and he was saying, hang on, we need to do this. And if he passed on those instructions to Bob Rush and Rush came out and had that amazing speech, we will overrun Geelong, it's going to be great. Let me read you just a couple of lines from Glenn's book. He says, how was Australia's most famous football coach going to operate without its a team without its coach? Even from his sickbed, he was sending instructions to Victoria Park.
He was sending instructions?
Yeah, on the Sunday, he sent for some members of his selection committee to talk over the game. Then on Tuesday, he sent for Frank Wraith, and I've spoke to Frank's grandson. Now, Frank talked about not using the ball on Tuesday and Thursday. I'm satisfied that I've heard the players have had too much football. I take full responsibility, even though I am a sick man. He did listen via radio, 3LO, but again...
Did he?
He wasn't there.
He wasn't there, man.
So if we had some sort of dissertation, or if we had an extensive document from the AFL justifying this decision, no one else coached him. He gave specific instructions. We made this decision 2 years out. It is a concrete decision. I'd feel good about that. The fact that they just came out and said, Bobby boy, this is your one game. You've had this game for 66 years, but we're taking it off you and we're not really going to alert anyone. That makes me feel uneasy.
Well, let me just say this to you. You know when Peter Swab took ill?
Yes.
He was at the club that week and they talked, they went through...
But they had Donald McDonald who stood in for him.
But hang on. What I'm saying is, these coaches actually had been working with their club up until the time when all of a sudden they're crook. Ken Hinckley all of a sudden had to be rushed to hospital. Don't you think he spoke about his team that week? Weren't they talking about selection? Same with Alistair Clarkson before he became crook. The same with Peter Swab. All of a sudden, you know, he wakes up in the morning on the Saturday morning, whatever it is, or the Friday morning. All of a sudden, he's got a few pains. What, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, he had nothing to do with the side, nothing to do with the selection? Come on. So the AFL says, we're not giving games to these people, but we're going to give it to McHale.
But McHale didn't have anyone officially replacing him.
Oh, because there wasn't a press conference.
Can I ask you, Kevin, what
happened? That is so So much rubbish, honestly.
You've called it a historical lie. I think it's absolutely a porky. Well, can I ask you a question?
Ask Glenn McFarlane why they actually say Murray Wiedemann is the coach of the Collingwood 1958 Premiership side when Frank Tuck was the captain who got injured in the preliminary final. Now, I reckon he would have been down at the club during the week. He would have been saying to his players, come on, we can win this grand final. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to get up, actually, in the grand final, but unfortunately, he never got up. He would have been at the grand final. Unfortunately, the captain did not play, and guess what? He's not the captain of the Collingwood Premiership side.
Kevin,
Murray Wiedemann is the captain of the Collingwood Premiership side.
A bloke stood in for him. There was no one vacant. Can I ask you, Kevin, are we allowed to criticise Mick Malthouse if they lose to St Kilda and then they lose to, Collingwood? If they're 0-5 and he breaks this wonderful milestone, 715 games, does Mark Evans think that we should still say, what a great performance, let's do another week of tribute? Because at 0-5, Carlton will have a big decision to make. The milestone will be gone. They will be thinking to themselves, do we get someone in? Are we allowed to, as Greg Denham did in the Australian Today, talk to Ross Lyon? A lot of rumours around that Ross Lyon might replace Mick Malthouse. Now, Ross said, look, no way, I'm contracted for 2 years. That story was spreading like wildfire, so congratulations to Greg to knock that one on the head. It won't be happening. But again, all these things are part of the narrative. All these things are part of what makes Mick Malthouse warding off the advances of other star coaches out there, getting himself a contract against the odds, rebuilding a side when it seemed like all is lost. You know, we show respect to him in what we've done and what he's done because he's still there after 31 years. It doesn't mean that we should navel gaze and just wipe all of the relationships that we have with him, negative or positive. Mickey's who he is. If he needs to be criticised, he'll be criticised. He's big enough and ugly enough to accept that.
The Buzz, of course, is always brought to you by Eco Garage Doors. Now, as a special for the month of April and May, Eco Garage Doors will be donating $200, that's right, $200, from every insulated garage door sold to your nominated sporting club or charity. Now, we all have a charity close to our hearts or a local sporting club, so it's your choice, and Eco will send $200 on your behalf. So give Eco a call for a free quote on 9703 1500, 9703 1500, or go online at ecogaragedoors.com.au.
I accept the tribunal's sanction. It wasn't my intention to hurt Paul, who I respect enormously, and I'm very sorry for it. Just like to apologise to the Carlton supporters, and I look forward to getting out in 3 weeks' time with my teammates and hopefully getting a few wins on the board.
There was Chris Sharon, of course, speaking after the tribunal last night. All players these days use that term, don't they? Respect enormously, no matter what happens, who the club is, who the player is, who the team is, we respect them enormously.
I just belted him. You know what? I thought Chris Yaron copped his right whack. I thought maybe it was medium. Instead, they sent it to the tribunal. And the positive of that is we heard from Paul Chapman. Now, some people out there today are saying, well, Paul Chapman, welched on his teammate or a former teammate.
Dobbed him in.
No way. Mate, the player code is dead and should have been dead for a long time. All Paul Chapman did was say, I was rocked by the hit. I didn't see it coming. And I applaud Paul Chapman. I was in that tribunal last year where Joel Selwood probably got Brent Harvey off. And let's face it, Brent Harvey shouldn't have missed a final for a very silly, innocuous incident. The rule was wrong. It's been changed since, jumping into a player. But I felt uneasy with that Joel Selwood was so happy to get him off. I'm the champion of bleeders. And Boomer Harvey afterwards said, look, it was great. I gave him a beer in the International Rules Series. That sat a little bit poorly with me. Mm. So for Paul Chapman to come out and just say exactly what he should have said, the truth, I applaud Paul Chapman.
Are the fans happy with that? 9429 1116, that Paul Chapman just said he rocked me.
Yep.
He did something that was unexpected. I didn't expect him to just punch me in the head.
Yeah, he didn't over-egg the pudding. He just told the truth, and that's all we expect of players, nothing more, nothing less.
Johnny joins us in Frankston. G'day, John.
Oh, g'day, fellas. Look, my opinion is this. What would happen if every time a team went out, they were instructed to grab their opponent by the jumper and ragdoll them and punch them in the throat and in the shoulders time and time again? I mean, it's just ridiculous that Chapman, I've been watching that Yaron play for years. He's not a thug. He just goes out and plays his football. Now, I don't barrack for Carlton, but I thought under the circumstances that he was quite in his right to have a crack back because, if it happened in the street, some guy's come up to you and starts ragdolling you, punching the throat, what are you supposed to do? Just let him do it.
He's played 108 games. He's never been suspended before. It's beholden upon the umpires to pay that free kick. If someone grabs your jumper and you're off the ball, you pay the free kick. It breaks it up.
You can't be a vigilante on the football field.
No, I don't think that exonerates him in any way. But the umpires need to pay those free kicks. I know people were critical of Bernie Vince. I thought Bernie Vince did the right thing. But when he transgressed against Dangerfield, they paid a free kick against him. Tex Walker continually whacked and smacked at Tom McDonald. There were no free kicks paid there. And so if the AFL umpires get in quickly and pay a free kick, well, it lessens the chances of these things happening.
And if people are jumper punching, then they've got to take that on board The umpire's got to step in there. There's unduly rough play. If the umpire believes that, you know, you can't just pick up your opponent and just dump him on the ground for no reason whatsoever when he hasn't got the ball. So, again, it's up to the umpires, John. I don't think, unfortunately, that even though you're under, you know, some sort of duress, you can't just retaliate and start punching people because someone's, you know, giving you a bit of a nudge in the ribs. So
and I reckon the AFL...
You can't do that.
Or in the match review
Not
panel.
Under the rules.
Match review panel has accepted jumper punches for too long and said, oh, well, he didn't make contact.
Far too long.
There was that incident with Tom Hawkins last year where I think Tom had a very strong jaw, wasn't rocked at all. Ah, move on. So once you do that, players think to themselves, as long as I got a bit of a jumper punch, and as it turned out, Chris Yaron smashed him and realised he didn't have any part of his jumper. Reckon they've just let that be a bit of a slippery slope, and they need to crack down on that as well.
Thanks for your call, John. Appreciate it. Joe's in Coburg. G'day, Joe.
How are you, boys? How are you going? Look, a couple of weeks ago when Sam Mitchell helped out Johnson, that's what real men do. You know, Selwood helped out and got the other guy off as well. It doesn't surprise me that Chappie, who's weak, has broken the rule. He's no real tough man in the football game. He's weak.
Can I say this to you, Joe? That the vision of Yaron just throwing a left hook and hitting Chapman in the jaw, it's pretty hard to make up a story against that. Now, with Mitchell's case, Johnson came after he'd sort of spiked the ball on.
Yep.
He was late.
Yep.
And gave him, as he went past, an elbow sort of forearm bang into the back of his back. Well, you could say, look, it brushed me. I was going off. I was part of rotations at that particular point of time. But if, in fact, it shows a left hook and all of a sudden you're staggered and you're taken off and you've got blood coming out, it's pretty hard, I would think, for Chapman to actually say, look, he didn't hit me.
Yep.
It was just a glancing blow.
But he could have said that, though.
I was off for 20 minutes, but, I mean, so he's in a position surely where the picture, if he wanted to help Chris Yaron, it was impossible unless he just told blatant lies.
Well, Kevin, have you been at the tribunal for the last 40 years? That's exactly what players have done. Yes, he hit me, but I didn't even really feel it. I mean, afterwards, I realised there was a little bit of blood, which is what Joel Selwood said. I didn't really know what was going on. Then I just looked at my face, and Jeff Gleeson said, why did you look at your face? Oh, and it was just I thought it was a bit of sweat. And as it turned out, there was 6 gallons of blood. So that's exactly what players have done.
And he was down on the ground, and Yaron, in fact, was trying to lift him up to pretend he was okay.
He was. But Paul Chapman came out and spoke the truth. Now, that incident last year, it was Ben Stratton being hit by Tom Hawkins, and Ben Stratton just, immobile, just a jaw of granite. And so, again, maybe some players would have looked at that and thought, well, you could probably get away with things like that. As it turns out, Yaron got his right whack.
So, if Yaron had grabbed him by the jumper
and
did exactly the same punch, do you reckon he may have got off?
Oh, he might have got a fine. He might have got 1 week. No doubt. They let jumper punches go, and yet when a player like Yaron does what he does, he gets 3 weeks. I think there's a double standard there.
Okay, Billy's from Bulleen. G'day, Bill. Chris Yaron.
How are you, boys? He sounds like a detective sergeant, Johnny Ruff. He never changes. He's as square as a butterbox.
Square as a butterbox. That's a beauty.
Yeah, but I'll tell you something. I just reckon there's a code. I don't care what you two people say. I remember when Mickey Martin got backhanded all the way to the line by Gary Ablett Jr., senior. Yeah, and Ablett even got the free kick. I don't know why. Blind umpires. Mouth split open, blood everywhere. He went to the tribunal, even the papers, and all wrapped him for saying because he didn't give Ablett up. And Ablett played in the grand final. But there's a code. I don't care if you lie or you don't say anything. You forgot. You didn't see it. I remember Kevin Sheedy getting knocked out by Mickey Dowdle when he tried to rough Dowdle up. He spun him around, didn't kick him. Shaped that went boom, down went Sheedy. He didn't give him up.
But just on that, it's a good point that you make, Bill, about this theory about don't give him up. Is that what the fans think? If someone goes out on the football field and just decides and goes bang and just punches somebody, then that person's got to be protected by the person who's been hit. In this day and age, do you reckon, Bill, that people agree with that? Because of the violence that we see out on the streets, that all of a sudden, maybe that's changed a fair bit, that we don't like people now just going up and starting to punch people in the head.
It's a 1950s opinion. There are 26 cameras. It's in the middle of the MCG. We've all seen what's happened. And for Paul Chapman to come up there and go, oh, Your Honour, I can't really remember. There was no damage, even though I got all these stitches and I had to go off under the concussion rule. That's what used to happen. It was the stupidest thing of all time. Now we're getting truth. Bring it on.
Well, in actual fact, even if you punch somebody, but if you didn't get reported on the day, well, then it didn't matter what it showed on the TV. So what would happen after a game is that, you know, the team manager would go down and he'd come back and he'd come into the room and say, no reports, no reports. And they go, oh, thank God for that, you know.
Because, that was it, yeah.
You know, Billy Bloggs just, you know, just went bang and hit somebody. Mm-hmm. But there was no reports. Now, if that night they showed it on TV and it showed, you know, Billy Bloggs going bang and punching somebody in the head, there was no report by video. So if you got away with it on the day, you got away with it.
So when you were reported...
It's hard to get away with it today.
So when you were reported for striking Nan Curvis...
No vision whatsoever.
And Nan Curvis came out and said, I apologise, Kevin, I headbutted your fist.
Correct. I took his apology.
I think the players' code was alive and well there.
I took his apology. We'll take a break.
I think it should end perhaps in a park. So whether it's Yarra Park, Treasury Gardens, wherever it might be. But I want to see a situation where families can come and have that kind of traditional AFL or even a kind of country footy family day where it's all families. It's not just blokes in suits dressed like I am now. This notion that if it's a public holiday you won't get a good crowd, like, have you been to Moomba lately? This notion that families won't come out to celebrate and enjoy their game, I think more people will have access to what is already an important event and can be even bigger because they'll have the day off.
Now, Ralphie, just before we get back to our calls and fly through them, why are they thinking about changing the grand final parade because people are not going to go into the city?
I don't think they are thinking about changing it. The only thing they would do is, rather than march straight up Bourke Street, they might keep going and go to the Yarra Park or they might stop at the Treasury Gardens. I don't think anyone's saying they're going to abolish it. There might be some sort of alternate route. Of course people are going to come in.
Who says they're not coming in?
No one, I don't think. Maybe the AFL in some, you know, someone sourced the AFL comments. I don't know what the story is. They might move the route. It might start further up St Kilda Road or further back. Look, I've got a couple of young ones. If you had the day off beforehand, you don't know what to do with your day. Of course you'd bring them in. You'd have a sausage sizzle. You'd kick the footy. I'm sure the AFL will have a lot of those handball comps and mascots and all those kind of things. I don't know what the issue is. All those kind of things.
Wasn't that the idea that, you know, you have a public holiday and therefore you tap into the grand final week and the celebration. Ask the fans on a public holiday, would you like to get involved on grand final parade day?
What else are you going
to
do?
Be involved, go to the parade or go to other outdoor activities set up by the AFL. And where should the parade be? Is it the right spot to have the parade at the moment?
Yep.
People like the parade in the city?
It's a new day, so it's not like Good Friday where you've got traditions going to the country with your family. You bring the kids in for a couple of hours. You go back and watch the footy marathon. I don't know what the issue is.
Let's go to Trout, who joins us in Wood End. G'day, Trout.
Hello, KB. Hey, Buzz.
Hello,
now,
Trout.
Now, KB, now you're talking about the Jock McHale record, how there's a little bit of a false thing there with one game. Now, if Mick or a coach is sacked early in the year and the club pays out his contract and then he's been paid out for coaching for that year, why are those games not counted on the same system as the other one?
Trout. I got no idea, Trout.
Because someone else will be in the hot seat. That's why. The confusion over 1930 is that no bugger was in the hot seat.
They would hold a press conference, Trout. And say that person is sacked, and now we're going to have Johnny Ralph as coaching the club. Not many press conferences were held back in 1920 and 1930, by the way.
They weren't video streamed.
I don't know who their media manager was back then.
No one live tweeted them.
Can we find out who the media manager was for Collingwood back in 1930? Because he forgot to put it on the website. Collingwood did tweet back in 1930 to notify the fans. That's what we're told by Collingwood supporters. Ron is in Donvale. G'day, Ron.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks, Ron.
Very, very excited about Mick breaking the Jock McHale record on Saturday week.
Ironically,
it's against Collingwood. And I'd actually like to suggest that all the Collingwood supporters get there early. And my suggestion is meet at gate 6. And we'll collect some money that we can, in fact, raise some money to build a statue for Mick outside the Westpac Centre. if we did this... we'd then have somewhere to graffiti.
Well, I think that's my point. Everyone's got an opinion on Mick. Does in the next fortnight it have to be a beautiful opinion? What a great person. If you don't like Mick, you're allowed to say it. I think the overwhelming majority of fans out there, and certainly his former players, love him. Now, of course, Chris Yaron misses St Kilda, Collingwood, and then Brisbane. Imagine if Brisbane managed to get a couple of players back and they beat them. They're 0-6. We only then allowed to criticise Mick Malthouse?
Carlton should be playing Collingwood this weekend. What happened was the AFL said to Mick, because they got stuffed up in McHale's games, who do you want to play in your milestone game? And he could have chosen West Coast or the Bulldogs. He could have chosen Richmond, who he played for. But he said, no, Collingwood, who he coached to a premiership. Yep. So they said, beauty. So that's round five when you break the record. We'll play Collingwood. In round four, you'll be playing St Kilda, of course, in New Zealand. If they had got it right, Collingwood would have been playing Carlton this weekend. Mm-hmm. And someone else would have been playing St Kilda in New Zealand. But that became a problem when we brought it up, Buzz, because do we really want Mick to break his record, McHale's record, in New Zealand against St Kilda when we actually asked him to? So that was a monumental stuff-up, and therefore we just perpetuate an historical lie. Brett is in Doreen. G'day, Brett.
Yeah, Johnny Ralph, how are you going?
Hello, Brett.
You've had a few cracks at Boomer Harvey about getting off at tribunal.
No, well, under the rules, he probably should have been suspended. Look, I think it was great that he actually played in that game, but my point is that I thought the testimony of Joel Selwood was overly generous. But you know what? Boomer Harvey, all he really did was sort of brace and maybe jumped into Selwood. Under the rules of the day, the way that rule was written...
And hit him in the head.
And hit him in the head and cut him open. Under the rules of the day, as they were written, he probably deserved a week. But the law of gut feel, common sense, no way he did. And that's why it's great, Brett, that the AFL has changed the rules and allowed players a bit more wriggle room.
I'm just going on memory. He actually got found guilty by the match review panel, didn't he?
He did. And
went suspended. Suspended. And then went to the
appeals process.
To the tribunal then.
Yeah.
Went to the tribunal. And then they overturned it.
No, Brett, I think it was great that he was able to play. It showed the judicial system actually worked well. But under the rules of the day, he was probably in strife.
But you were more unhappy with the fact that Selwood
gave him pretty favourable testimony.
Good, yeah.
So good that Boomer was desperate.
Was very kind to him and said, look, I didn't feel much. And in fact, I'm just a bleeder. In fact, if you just touch my eyebrow now, it'll just start bleeding.
It just spontaneously combust.
So whilst I had blood there...
I thought it was sweat.
It wasn't because it was of any force. There was no force whatsoever, because force is always important all these cases.
Yes, so I had seven bandages wrapped around my head. I just thought it was just a bit of a sweat pack.
Okay, we'll fly through your calls when we come back with the buzz. Don't forget, it's Melbourne Storm's membership day today on 11:16 SEN. Sign up before Anzac Day so that you don't miss a minute of all the action. Call 1300 786 767, 1300 786 767, or melbournestorm.com.au.
On Hungry for Sports, which magical moment caught your attention over the weekend? Find out if it made Ralphie's buzzer beater.
What amazing performance on the weekend caught your attention with the buzzer beater? And this is growing, it's becoming so popular, particularly your crystal ball buzzer beater.
Are you aware that Cooper Cronk is actually a very good player? I'm aware that you know that he's got the best name in sport, but he's
the coolest name.
The coolest name in sport, and he did it again. Drop goal to win, 17-16 over the Sydney Roosters. He's a megastar, that bloke. And we've got Jesse Bromwich coming along too. Ooh, might win the Daly M. My prediction of the weekend, well, it'll take a couple of weeks to just formulate and ferment, but I reckon Andrew Bogut's going to be the second Australian player in a row to get a NBA championship ring. He's been massive in the playoffs over the Pelicans.
Has he been massive?
14 rebounds again. They beat the Pelicans 97-98. Golden State are on fire. Curry's going well. Klay Thompson. But Bogut, finally injury-free, finally living up to the hype as the number one pick. We know Patty Mills was just huge in the championships. In that final game, was hot, white hot. And I just think Bogut is, well, he's going to be a NBA All-Star in the defensive team. And he might have a ring after a lot of years of trials and tribulations.
So the buzzer beater, of course, the best performance was Cooper Cronk.
Yep.
So
And a buzzer beater.
Did he a buzzer beater? And did he nail it? And, of course, looking in his crystal ball, he believes that Bogut is going to be a buzzer beater. A
couple of big dunks, too, from Bogut on the yesterday. Oh, big dunks.
No, they wouldn't have been big dunks.
Well, they were from Bogey. I've got a photo of it here. Oh, spectacular.
How tall is Bogut? Oh, 7'4", isn't
yes.
he?
One of them was from a freak pass, though, of Stephen Curry. So and all he did was slammed it down, but it was a freak dunk.
So he just stood there flat-footed and just put his hand up and just dropped the ball into the net.
You're a stubborn bugger. I told you that off the top of the program.
Let's go to Barney, who's in Rye. G'day, Barney.
G'day, Kev. I think you've been a little bit harsh on Jock McHale, mate, as he was laying in his hospital bed in 1930 listening to the broadcast on 3LO.
Yes.
I'm tipping that he may have had access to John Wren's crack SP blue checker white flight racing pigeon, who would have conveyed the message to the MCG. And unlike today, where they get the phone and smash it if they don't like the message that's being conveyed, I'm just hoping they didn't ring the poor bloody pigeon's neck, mate.
Well, that's why I said I agree with you that John Wren was involved that day with the pigeons. Mm-hmm. But my research tells me, as I said in my take this morning, that the carrier pigeons were on strike that day.
Well, if you'd used John Wren, maybe do you think the VFL had an integrity team back then? Probably 14 or 15 in the integrity team, and it probably would have got, I don't know, a year on the sidelines, and Mick would have to go on for one more year just to break Mick would have broke it last year. So, very good call. I like that.
Good on you, Barney. Dave is in Preston. G'day, Dave. Wants to talk about Chris Yaron.
Morning, lads.
G'day.
I'd like to say, blind Freddie could see that Yaron hit Chapman, and yep. If it had been the other way around, they would have been screaming because Chapman's got a bad record. Also, Kev, I'd like to know, how do they work out the low impact? Is it concussion? Is it six stitches? Like, where do they draw the line, you know?
Well, I thought it was medium impact because he just clipped him. Yes, he took blood. Was he concussed? No. He took the concussion sub.
Stitches?
Stitches,
well,
yes.
I think they'd have to have medium impact.
I thought it was medium.
If it was low impact, yep. I would think, Dave, that you know you wouldn't be stitched up if it was low impact. You know, you might get a bit of swelling or a bit of a bruising. But I think if you have to be stitched up, they'd have to say that was medium.
Yeah, so I thought it was medium. But I reckon the positive of the tribunal system now, the judicial system, is if they're not quite sure, they refer it, and you get to hear the testimony. We heard Brendan Goddard last night say, look, it wasn't really just above the eye. It was actually near the temple, and it's harder to cut someone open. We heard the testimony from Paul Chapman. So I think that the system worked exactly as it should have.
But it's what Dave is saying, should they say now, if it's low impact, you go across and it's got, you know, bruising, swelling on your feet within, you know, a certain amount of time. Medium impact, you know, bleeding, stitched up, had to leave the field. You know,
we should be a bit
severe impact,
specific.
Carried off on a stretcher, you know.
I think we all feel a bit weird when someone gets smashed, like Campbell Brown smashed Callum Ward, and the bloke doesn't have any damage, and we say, oh, it's only low impact. I reckon you've got to take a combination of what happens to the bloke and the intent of trying to punch him really hard or punching him flush or just skimming him. Too often they just look at the injury. You've got to combine all those things. But I reckon justice was probably served. I thought maybe 2 weeks he got three. I don't think anyone's got too many issues with that.
Jimmy Bartel had a free kick paid against him and went to Riscatelli. The AFL has ticked off and said Riscatelli was fine, that it wasn't a free kick for sliding. I disagree with that. I think when Riscatelli went, if he was just bending down picking up the ball, I would think then there would be no free kick against Riscatelli. But the fact that he went to ground and his knee was on the ground when he crashes into Jimmy Bartel, I think you'd have to say that he has tripped Jimmy Bartel and taken him below the knees.
And the AFL says that Hayden Kennedy, the umpire's coach, said, what was his expression? It wasn't a bowling ball reckless style. Well, how does the umpire determine that? I think on a wet day, he goes to ground, he slides into Bartel, Bartel gets 8 weeks. Of course, the umpire wouldn't know that at that stage, but I thought it was definitely a free kick to Bartel. Instead, they said it was the other way around.
Well, I mean, once the player goes to ground,
yes,
and when that rule was brought in, it was to go by the rule book that you can't trip people. And below the knee is a trip. So if you grab someone below the knee, you're tripping him, or put your hand out, or you put your leg out and hits him below the knee, well, then you're tripping that player. So,
well, why did they bring the rule in, Kevin? So players didn't get knee injuries.
Correct.
So I would have thought Hayden Kennedy would have said, you know what, it was a 50-50 call. We weren't that upset on the day. But given that Bartel was injured, in the future, we'd like to see that player rewarded because that's the whole reason we brought the damn rule in.
See, if he was just bending down for the ball, and I'm not quite certain how he would get tripped, but if he was just bending down low for the ball and somehow he cannoned into him, then that would be okay. But yeah, the fact is, his knee's on the ground. You know, he's gone down that he's gone down low for the ball, could sense someone was there, and his right knee is actually on the ground. Now, if your knee's on the ground and you're going forward, you'd have to say that, you know, you have taken his legs.
And that's the part, going forward. It's the momentum thing. You're allowed to have your knees on the ground, but if you slide into someone, well, there's capacity
right
for the kind of issue that saw him out for 2 months, and now we see that Stokes is an Achilles injury. Mm. Now, they play North Melbourne.
You think they're shot now, the Cats?
I don't... Geez, it's going to be tough. It was one of the most amazing wins you've ever seen, out in their legs. I'm not sure if Lonergan plays. By all accounts, he recovered really quickly. You know, my feelings on concussion, blokes should have a week off. But if they go in against North Melbourne undermanned, what would they be? They'd be 1-3 if they lose that. It's tough to get back for 1-3.
We'll take a break. We're coming back with the buzz and we're taking more of your calls. Coming up, Ian Robson's going to join us. Melbourne Victory CEO Rowan Dummett, of course, from the Melbourne Golf Academy, always fixes your golf swing on radio. He can give you a lesson. Brian Waldron always talks about the business of sport. Gary Ablett says he's going to come back bigger and better than ever.
No doubt he can get back.
And get better.
To the level. We're not going to get better. I mean, everyone always says that. The Premiership team always says, you know, a warning of doom for our rivals. We're going to get better. They don't often. But if he could get back to 90%, maybe he won't win another Brownlow medal. But he's got a huge responsibility up
you
there.
You think Jobe Watson is going to win the Brownlow medal?
Well, he can go close. Imagine if they did write a movie about him and books about him and Essendon.
If they win the Premiership,
well,
Brendan Goddard will be spot on. Yeah. They'll make a movie.
Within the next 3 years, in Jobe's next 3 years, it'd be an amazing last chapter to a pretty absorbing story.
You've been, as always, very antagonistic today,
thank you,
Buzz. And I did like your buzz a bit. I thought that was a beauty. We'll speak soon.